Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Friday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and wait, I said Friday.
Start spreading the news.
Oh, there's almost part of me that wishes that song was a little longer. But anyways, you know that means that Schomburg Stu is here. How you doing, Stu?
All right. Welcome to the wonderful world of sports, except for Chicago.
Yes. So, hey, if you'd like to call into the podcast, talk to Stu or I, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so look for something popping up there, oh, hopefully sometime tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're over at sportstimeradio.com, you want to go ahead and hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we greatly appreciate it. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, sadly, we still don't have Stu out there on Twitter. We're still working on that. But I am out there at Burke Time, and as always, you can send me any comment, quote, or whatever else you'd like to pass along to Schomburg Stu, and I would give that to him. So here we go.
All right.
It's been a busy day in Major League Baseball for players getting signed to avoid arbitration. And, you know, I got to tell you, some of the numbers I saw here are, I don't know, I thought kind of small. Like Aaron Judge got $8.5 million. I kind of thought he would end up landing more than that, but
yeah, that's surprising.
You know, our guy Jorge Soler got 7-3 to avoid arbitration with the Royals today. So,
well, based on his performance last year, that was a pretty good deal.
Yeah, and you know, and of course, the big one is the Indians actually came to terms with Francisco Lindor. I'm looking for the numbers here to see if he's included in this one or if they put him in his own little category. Yeah, it looks like they put him in his own little category. Let's see what he got there. It looks like, well, they made a deal with Mike Clevenger, too, who got $4.1 million. And Francisco Lindor's package is for $17.5 million. So he actually got a little more than what he was projected to get in arbitration. He was projected to get about 16.7. So he's a little over. Of course, you know, we'll hear the big trade talk with him going on forever. But, yeah, you know, a lot of names, you know, you'll know. The Yankees not only came to terms with Judge, they locked up Gary Sanchez and James Paxton. The Twins locked up Eddie Rosario and Byron Buxton. The Astros took care of Carlos Correa. The Orioles wrapped things up with Trey Mancini. The Tigers took care of Matthew Boyd. The White Sox had four guys agree: Carlos Rodon, Nomar Mazara, Lourdes Garcia, and Evan Marshall. Any other? Oh, and they also had Alex Colomay. So there you go. They had five. The Rangers and Joey Gallo worked something out. Hey, Tommy La Stella got a deal, $3.25 million. Yeah, I know you're happy for Tommy.
I am. He had a good year before he got hurt.
So, yeah, you know, those are some of the guys. And, of course, there were, you know, the National League as well. Obviously, you know, locally here, the big one is Chris Bryant got a deal for $18.6 million instead of going to arbitration with the Cubs. And then the important thing with Bryant is they said, was along with his signing, is the fact that his grievance is supposed to be decided in 2 weeks. So it will then we'll know if he's going to be, you know, in free agency next year or if it's going to be 2022. So
Well, I don't think he's going to win that one.
Yeah. But, yeah, you know, the National League side, the Mets locked up 9 guys. So they were quite busy. You know, the Padres locked up their closer, Kirby Yates. Let's see what some of the, if there's some other bigger names cruising through here. It doesn't look, the Pirates locked up Josh Bell. Not too many giant names on the National League side. I think a little more well known on the American League side. Robbie Ray did sign for $9.43 million, which will be his actually the last year there for him before he hits free agency. So yeah, some names but there were a ton of guys who came to agreements on deals today. Surprisingly, the Red Sox ones weren't listed. They must be in another category here. They had 3 signings. Brandon Workman got a small deal for $3.5 million. They worked out a deal with Jackie Bradley Jr., but I don't see his number here. Of course, the big one was, or no, here they find, there it is. It's $11 million, which is huge for a guy like Jackie Bradley. But the big one, of course, is they worked it out with Mookie Betts, 1 year, $27 million. Before he heads into free agency. So, you know, he'll be the other hot name now on if these guys are going to get traded. I don't know. Can the Red Sox get anything for Betts at that price tag and with only 1 year left before he heads into free agency?
It seems unlikely. And some numbers that have cropped up on what you just mentioned are surprising to me. Is Bradley worth $11 million? And Judge only worth 8? I can't understand that.
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with where you are in the arbitration process, but I really thought Bradley was going to be the guy that the Red Sox kind of sacrificed to save some money, but they seem to like him, and I get that he's a Gold Glove defender, but eventually he's got to come to the plate and swing the bat, and that's just not a fantastic part of his game.
No, I
don't know. So, you know, it was kind of a surprise that they went that route. But yeah, Betts settled for the largest single deal before going into, for arbitration like this. You know, before Arenado signed his contract with the Rockies, he settled for 26. So Betts beat him by, $1 million, and I'm sure somebody will come along down the line that'll beat him, sooner or later.
Well, you mentioned quite a few players and signing these arbitration deals today. And a lot of these players have been mentioned in trade or signing to other team deals. Does the fact that they signed their arbitration has been avoided make any difference in their possibility of being traded one way or the other?
No, I think all it really means is what you're going to have to pay them now if you acquire them instead of getting them before they go through the arbitration process.
Yeah, no, and a lot of them sign for what we expected them to sign, except in some of those instances you talked about, Judge, for example, most people thought that Brian would sign for around the amount he actually received. There's no surprise there.
Yeah. Most of the guys. When it comes to stuff like this, when you're agreeing on these kind of things, normally you end up signing relatively close to the area. You're expected to sign at. Otherwise, you wouldn't be signing your deal. So yeah, it's not a huge surprise that these guys rolled in, right around their number. But yeah, I I'm a little surprised that Judge's number is so low. I thought for sure he would be, he would be a little higher up there.
Does longevity go into it, you think? He hasn't been with the Yankees all that long, and I know that Bradley, for example,
with
Boston a lot longer than Judge has been with the Yankees, for example.
Yeah, that's how it is you know, kind of based out, you know, the longer you're in, the more you're paid. So it, you know, it kind of, you know, kind of works out that way. And it's just a matter of, you know, do you want to take the money, or, you know, do you want to ride out the process? You know, and I know, like, you know, the Astros signed Carlos Correa for $8 million. A lot of the projections I read said he was going to get about 7.5. So, you know, they're right around, right at the number, you know, where these things kind of should be. You know, I guess a lot just kind of depends on who your agent is and what they can work out for you.
And these are all 1-year deals, correct? On the arbitration. So does that mean that
the year they go
through arbitration again?
Yeah. The only guy who signed for multiple years was David Peralta with the Diamondbacks. He took a 3-year deal. But yeah, you know, that's kind of how arbitration works. You go through arbitration until you're a free agent.
Right. So next year, say Judge has a great year for the Yankees. So he'll be in line for a lot more money for next year's arbitration deal rolls along, unless the Yankees say, hey, this guy is a consistently good player, let's sign him to a long-term deal.
Yeah. And I'm really surprised that something like that hasn't happened yet there. You know, they're pretty good about signing their, you know, their guys. So you got to wonder if maybe is something in the works. I don't know how many more years he has left of arbitration, you know, but that's, you know, that's kind of the new wave is, you know, if you like your guy, you know, you try to buy out his arbitration years. You know, the White Sox have done that the last 2 years. You know, they did it with Eloy Jimenez last year, and then they got Luis Robert signed this year.
That's right. And it's a pretty long-term deal with him, too.
Yeah, you know, well, you know, it needs to be kind of, because I think you go in arbitration for like 4 or 5 years. So you need to be able to, you know, eat up those, you know, those arbitration years.
Yeah, it's interesting when a team signs a unproven player to a long-term deal, you always wonder who's going to come out ahead in the deal, the player or the team. Now, in the Cubs' case, of course, they came out very well with that long-term deal they signed with Rizzo a number of years ago. But it doesn't always work out that way. Maybe what if a guy turns out to be a bust after a year or so? Then team's stuck.
You know, the Astros did that. They signed, I think his name was Jonathan White. He came up and had a really good showing for them, and then he took a contract for 10 years at $10 million. You know, not a huge number, but obviously, you know, it allows him financial security and you know, a lot of things like that. But you know, and then he just kind of flamed out.
Well, in that case, it benefited the player, not the team. So it's a crapshoot.
Yeah. You know, I mean, just, you know, kind of, you know, it's a lot like anything else. I mean, it's hit or miss, you know, when you're signing players and, you know, who knows where or how they're going to, you know, they're going to end up or what they're going to actually do. I mean, you know, I mean, we've seen, you know, number one pick struggle, and, you know, we've seen guys who, you know, make it in their, you know, who made, you know, were drafted in the 50th, 60th round that come in and have great careers. So
yeah. And what about the possibility of renegotiation? I know that happens in some other sports on occasion. Can it happen in baseball? A player signs, say, for $50 million for 6 years, and he winds up being a .320 hitter with 40 home runs and 120 RBIs every year. And after 2 or 3 years, they'll say, I want to renegotiate my contract. Can that be done? Or is he stuck?
Yeah, you know, guys do it or try to do it all the time. You know, I mean, that's why some guys end up sitting out. I know it doesn't happen as much in baseball as it does the other sports.
Right, exactly.
But, you know, there's always a guy who takes the long-term money because he wants to be financially secure, and then he outplays the contract, you know, and then there's always complaining about it because, you know, he's outplaying the contract, and it's like, well, you signed it. So.
Yeah, of course he wouldn't say anything if he underperformed, would he?
No, they
I'll
don't
give
money back when you
perform. He won't do that,
yeah,
right?
The minute they're a little better than what that contract is supposed to be paying them, you hear their agent or the player or whoever it is crying that they should be paid more. So.
Yeah, and that always bothers me when that happens. Because to me, a contract is a contract. You sign a deal. Don't argue about it. Don't even consider renegotiation. Stop moaning and play ball. By the way, which is what Rizzo did, of course, right? He never complained about his contract.
It's one of those things that for some reason is very prevalent in the NFL. You know, guys will hold out. I know the Eagles are already having a problem. Pretty much as soon as they got eliminated from the playoffs, one of their defensive backs, Malcolm Jenkins, came out and said if his contract's not renegotiated, he's not reporting next year. It's like, oh, okay, great. Well, you know, your team just got beat. You think maybe you could have waited a day or two?
If someone threatens to do that and actually does it, what recourse does the team have without just not paying him? And he can't sign with another team.
You know, I've always wondered if a team has more recourse than what they actually do. Basically, what they don't, you know, like you said, they don't pay them. And then in some cases, depending on the contract, they can ask for the signing bonus back, you know, part of the signing bonus. So, you know, it just depends on how the contract is structured.
Right. And you really can't blame a team for doing that. You know, you really can't blame a team for doing that.
You know, even though they're always made to look bad when they do it, you know, people seem to forget that this is a business and, you know, you're talking about, you know, hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of dollars. So, yeah, you know, it's just kind of how that works, you know, how that works out. But, yeah, luckily, for whatever reason, baseball doesn't seem to have that issue much. Guys don't genuinely hold out. You know, the BS we deal with in baseball is when, you know, the free agents are trying to milk you for the money, and then all of a sudden spring training started and they're still at home, you know, and then they come in and stink the first year you sign them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we know all about that here, don't we?
There, and Philadelphia knows all about it with Jake Arrieta, and, you know, the Orioles learned the super hard way with Alex Cobb and Andrew Cashner, and, you know,
doesn't it? Yeah.
So, you know, I think the only one who was decent was Dallas Keuchel was decent, and he was just a 500 pitcher. So, you know, and I do wonder if maybe that's why we saw more of these guys jump on deals earlier, you know, when they had opportunities. I mean, all the big-name free agents are signed with the exception of Josh Donaldson. So.
Yeah, he's still out there, isn't he? That's right. And it seems logical it would behoove the players who haven't signed to avoid signing after spring training because you know it's going to take them a while to get in shape. Everybody else will be in baseball shape, and you're not, and it's going to take some time. And we all know what happens when that occurs.
Yeah, and I always laugh when, you know, the agent will always throw up the progressive. Well, you know, he's been working out on his own or he's been throwing, you know, his sessions here or his sessions there. It's just not the same as being in camp.
No, it's not. And I have to chuckle when I see those cliches come out. And, you know, it's different. There's a difference between working out on your own and working out in camp, as the players have found over the years.
So, yeah, you know, like I said, I wonder if that was the driving force behind a lot of these guys. I mean, you know, there were guys who got their contracts right away. Hey, here you go. I'm signing here. Okay, thank you. You know, next. So.
Well, maybe they learned from what happened to some other players who signed late, and what happened to them when they got into actual into actual game action, and it didn't work out too well for them, and they learned a lesson, and the players are getting smarter now. Let's hope so, at least.
Yeah, you know, you can always hope, but you know, there's, you know, and you wonder. I mean, obviously, it's, you know, the stuff like that is as much agent driven as it is player driven. So.
Yeah. I wonder sometimes if a player hasn't signed yet and the agent tells him, for example, Scott Boras, I can get you more, and the player says, that's enough. Stop negotiating. Sign the deal.
Yep.
Let's play ball.
So, yeah, you do wonder. And I know I can tell you, actually, with the free agents, you know, MLB Trade Room is the site we get a lot of our information from. They run a free agent prediction contest every year. And I'm actually sitting 3 out of the lead right now. I've predicted 11 of the signings correct, and the leader has 14. So.
Hey, that's not too bad.
Yeah, you know, we'll have to see how the, you know, the rest of it kind of works out. I mean, luckily for me, my bread and butter has been the guys who have just kind of stayed with the teams they were with. You know, I've hit on quite a few of them. I haven't had much luck with guys jumping teams, so I need to kind of land a couple of those to move up. So we'll see how that works.
If you wind up second place, you get at least $25,000 for second place.
You know, I forgot what the prize was. It's not. You know, anything like that. But, you know, sadly, there are quite a few guys in front of me. There are quite a few guys who are tied and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So, yeah, even though I'm only 3 out of the lead, I'm way down the board. But, yeah, maybe I'll get lucky and a couple of my guys will land here or there and I'll be able to make a jump up. So, but yeah, not only did we have all the, you know, the arbitration stuff, you know, the Cardinals made, you know, kind of a, you know, it seems like it's a bit of an odd trade, but I guess when you look at the roster, it makes sense. They sent off 2 major league players, Jose Martinez and Randy Arozarena is what I'm going to go with here, plus a competitive balance round A pick. I don't quite know what that means. And they shipped that off to Tampa Bay. In return, they get a very highly touted left-handed prospect, Matthew Libitor. They also get a very young catcher who I don't believe is played above rookie ball by the name of Edgardo Rodriguez. And then they get a competitive balance round B pick in return from the Rays. So, you know, Martinez is a fantastic major league hitter. I know the problem, of course, has always been finding a place to play him. You know, and I know everybody was really high on this, you know, and again, I'll butcher his name here, Arozarena. Maybe it's phonetically spelled here, and I could probably get it right, but then again, probably not. You know, but he only played 23 games at the, or he only had 23 plate appearances, 19 games at the major league level. He did hit 300 in his short time, but apparently he plays out, you know, he apparently is supposed to play out fairly well. But yeah, it seemed like an odd deal until you look at the Cardinals roster and you realize that, you know, they have Dexter Fowler and Harrison Bader and Lane Thompson and Tyler O'Neill. And then they got Tommy Edman who can play out there in the outfield. And, you know, they've got a couple other guys who are close to being ready to come up. So I, you know, I guess I understand why they made the deal. And if, you know, if Libitor is anything close to the pitcher he's expected to be, even though I think he just pitched in Class A ball last year, I want to double check that. Yeah, he went 6-2 in 15 starts with a 3.10 ERA in Class A. So he's a little ways away, but he is rated, you know, right around the top 50 for minor league prospects. And he's only 20. So we'll see, you know, if that pans out, and maybe it'll end up being a good deal for him.
Yeah, well, maybe that catcher will work out, because how many more years can Molina go before he calls it a career? By the time this kid goes to the super minors, maybe he can develop into a decent catcher for them.
Yeah, if this is the catcher who's going to replace him, Molina is probably going to have to catch about 5 or 6 more years, because this kid is only 19. So,
yeah, I don't see Molina playing that many years. I don't think he's going to go that far.
No, I don't either. I would be surprised if he made it, you know, 2 or 3, but, you know, just kind of, you know, we'll see how it goes here with him. He seems to continue to return regardless, but, I like the move of Martinez going to the American League, because, you know, that's kind of been the thing with him, is he's always been able to hit. So, you know, they'll be able to slot him in that DH role, where obviously, the Cardinals had difficult time finding at bats for him. They signed Goldschmidt, that kind of wrapped up, and
I was kind of surprised they peddled him, because the guy has such potential as a hitter. But as you pointed out, that's great if he had that potential and the talent as a hitter. But where is he going to play, especially in the National League?
Yeah, just, you know, I don't think he had enough talent to be an everyday corner outfielder. He probably could have been an everyday first baseman. But then when you look at it, you're like, well, are you going to play Paul Goldschmidt, or you're going to play Jose Martinez?
That's true.
So
not much of a question on that one. Is he going to be the DH for Tampa now, you think?
You know, they didn't really kind of specify. And, you know, with Tampa, you never know what the heck is going on there. With the way they kind of construct things and how they, you know, they just – and I have to say it's masterful the way they just kind of masterfully juggle guys, to get the most out of them. But you got to think, I mean, if you're acquiring a guy like that, I would think you would want that bat in the lineup every day. I mean, he's a homer, you know, 100 RBI guy in a good lineup.
Yeah, Tampa has always impressed me. I don't know how they do it. I don't know where they came up with the players, but they always seem to have a winning record.
So yeah, I want to see where they have him penciled in here. Right now it looks like they've got him penciled in as a bench guy, because I forgot they signed a Japanese guy, Yoshi Satsugo, and right now he's penciled in as the DH with former Cub G-Man Choi as their everyday first baseman. Both those guys hit left-handed. You know, Martinez would be probably the right-handed, you know, relief there.
Yeah, I'm always a little dubious when they bring in these Japanese players, because I'm not quite sure how they're going to work out, although, of course, there have been two or three great ones over the years, but a lot of them have been bust and have not performed at the major league level as they have performed in Japan.
Yeah, you know, the pitchers seem to do better than the hitters long term. When you think about it, I mean, obviously there was Ichiro, and then there was, what was it, Hideki Matsui, who did really well with the Yankees, and then the A's. But other than that, I mean, it's hard-pressed to find another Japanese hitter who's put together a decent career.
And don't forget about Fukudome.
Yeah, for half a season. So
he was great for the first half of the season.
Yeah. You know, but that's what I mean. You know, you kind of get guys like that who – you know, I mean, I wouldn't even call him average. You know, he would have a great first half, and his second half would be so bad, not even a, you know, you can't even consider him an average player.
Yeah, and I guess some of these guys just can't can't compete once they go around the league once or twice. They can't seem to make the adjustments after the league catches up to them and finds out their weaknesses. They just can't seem to overcome that. And that's it for their career.
The gigantic differences, in Japan you don't have guy after guy coming out throwing 90. It's more of, an off-speed type of league.
Right.
That's one of the things that really, I think, poses to the pitchers being better. I know Yu Darvish is a pretty hard thrower, but you don't get many guys coming out of Japan throwing, 90-plus.
More on guile. They get by with that. And off-speed stuff, as you said, and pitch location.
And I know Ohtani is a pretty hard thrower, but we'll see, where he comes in at once he's, through this shoulder rehab and everything, and see where he clocks in at, this year.
Yeah, that'll be quite interesting to see how Madden will play him. Will he be playing in the lineup as a DH every day when he doesn't pitch?
Yeah, they haven't said that. The thing I heard is apparently he is going to pitch every Sunday. So
they're taking it easy on him. In other words, they're going to restrict him to the amount of innings he pitches for this season?
Well, apparently, this is just going to be what they're going to do with him because, that's how it's done in Japan. You have your day and you start on your day and that's it. So, they're going to run him out there every Sunday. And then if they handle it like they did last time, that means he won't play on Saturdays and Mondays. Hmm. And then he'll be the DH the 3 days of the week there.
Do you know how many games they play in the Japanese league as compared to MLB?
I thought it was in the 150s. I thought they played close to. Yeah, I off the top of my head, I may be incorrect there, but
so that's very similar to Major League Baseball.
So I for some reason I thought it was that high, but again, like I said, I could be a little off there. I'll have to see if I can find it here real quick or something and see what. See what comes up, but yeah, I thought it was a decent number here.
If it's that many, do they have a standard 5-man rotation like they do in Major League Baseball?
What they have is whatever day you're chosen to pitch on is your day. You only pitch once a week.
But if they play a 150-game schedule, you would think they would play 4 or 5 games a week. So it's hard how that would work out.
Yeah, you would think. I mean, their season runs from March to October. So, I would think it's a decent amount. Let's see if this will tell me anything here. It doesn't look like they have a total, but we'll try batting and see if anybody played in a large number of games. The most games played on this team was 143, so maybe that's the total.
And if that's the case, then you would think that they must have a huge starting pitching staff if they only go once a week.
Well, I can tell you how many starters this team used because I'm on their stats right now. This is the Yumiuri Giants, by the way. Or do they not? Oh, they don't have it broken down by that. So, yeah, they just have games guys appeared in. They don't have how many starts they made. So. But I can probably tell you by innings here, there are 1, 2, 3, there are only four guys over 100 innings. So.
Yeah, obviously they don't start nearly as much as their counterparts do in the major leagues.
You know, yeah, it you wouldn't think. Yeah, they play 143 games in a season is how it works out.
Hey, wouldn't you be very, very suspicious if you were a general manager in Major League Baseball and the guy had great stats in Japan, but pitching is once a week? And how is he going to fare if he's a starter in the MLB? Will he hold up?
Yeah, well, you know, and that's been part of the problem, you know, I mean, is how, you know, how these guys have kind of, you know, kind of worked out, you know, I mean, I think Darvish missed a year with Tommy John. We just had Ohtani miss a year.
Correct.
So, you know, I think, you know, I know Tanaka has always had minor injuries here and there for the Yankees, nothing, you know, serious.
Of course, if you're an off-speed pitcher, you can maybe adapt a little bit better to Major League Baseball then, because if you don't throw with that high a velocity, you might be able to endure the rigors of a having more pitching starts than he would in Japan, for example.
So, yeah, I think it's still a little easier for, you know, a pitcher to, you know, to kind of come over and make the switch, you know, but even, you know, even to that, there have been some guys who have been, you know, horrible busts. Remember, I'm trying to think of the guy the Red Sox signed. Dice K was the nickname. And he was great his rookie year, and that, I think, was about all they got out of him.
Well, maybe he blew his arm out after that first year. He wasn't used to pitching so many innings and curtailing his career, which is quite unfortunate, of course.
Yeah, you know, I don't think he got hurt. I just don't know. What kind of happened, you know, and then there's the guys who just kind of, you know, hang around, you know, Koji Urahara seemed to pitch for just about every team. You know, he had a nice little, you know, what, 12, what I think 2009 to 2017, he spent in the major leagues after 10 years in Japan, you know, and he was a very solid reliever.
He had quite a career when you think about it. And he lasted between Japan and MLB close to 20 years, which is impressive.
So, but yeah, you know, you look at, you know, some of the guys, you know, I think it was the Yankees who paid a bunch of money for Hideki Arabu, and I don't think he was ever very good.
No, he was not.
So, you know, it's just, you know, it's very hit or miss with these guys. And I mean, hitter wise, you know, like I said, I mean, who, you know, you're banking on, you know, Ohtani being the next guy. Cause you know, besides that, I mean, I can give you Ichiro and I can give you the guy from, you know, Matsusuka from the Yankees or Matsusuki. You know, I know there was a middle infielder that I think was with the Mariners for a little while as well that was pretty solid, Matsui, but I would have to lie to you to tell you his first name. You know, other than that, you know, I remember the Mariners had a catcher who hung around a little bit but actually went back because he got homesick. So,
you know, I can see that happening. And I'm wondering, yeah, if all,
you know,
teams – are all the major league teams kind of, do they scout the players in Japan, or is it just maybe
more teams
than other teams do it?
You know, I mean, now everybody has scouted Japan, Korea, you know, any place, you know, any place you can find a baseball player at, there's probably a
Taiwan.
Scout there.
And don't forget Taiwan also, I think, has some teams there. Yeah, the talent is there. You know, I guess they go out or after them, but I'm still skeptical a little bit. I would go for homegrown talent as compared to what's going on in Japan. I don't think they're equal to the major league teams in terms of overall talent.
Yeah, well, I believe the guy the Reds signed was a big-time power hitter in Japan, so I'm going to be kind of interested to see how that translates. You know, again, because now obviously he's going to be facing power pitching, you know,
and
that he probably hadn't seen. So.
And don't forget that he's over, isn't he 32, that guy? He's been around a while.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of these, you know, remember Ichiro came over here when he was old and was still fantastic.
Yeah.
So.
But the exception to the rule, though, don't forget about that, too.
Yeah.
He was one. There aren't many like him that have come over and had that impact in baseball that he has had.
No, and, you know, to be fair, you know, it does work the other way. There have been quite a few American-born players that have went over to Japan and, you know, remade their careers. And, you know, the first guy I think of is Tuffy Rhodes, who obviously Cubs fans remember as having a gigantic opening day. He could have set the yearly home run record in Japan, but they refused to pitch to him. And I think he fell like three short or something like that, because they just intentionally walked him every time he came up, because they're not going to give up. You know, it's Kazuharu Oh who holds her. Yeah, I think it's Kazuharu Oh.
Right.
Tsuharu Oh who holds the record, and they're not going to, you know, they're not going to allow a Gaijin, which is what they call the American players, to break that record.
Do you know what the salaries are in Japan? I'm sure it can't be as much as Major League Baseball, is it? But it has to be decent enough to get so. Because quite a few Americans have gone there and stayed for a while, like Tuffy Rhodes.
Yeah, I'm sure it's decent. I don't think I've ever heard a salary reported in that, you know, in that case.
No.
So I don't know quite who or what they're. You know, they're paying guys, so, you know, I don't know if in Japan, I don't know if they've got to report it like they have to do here, so.
Yeah, I'm sure it's different out there, but, yeah, that Tuffy had that three home runs with the Cubs, didn't he, in that opener?
That was kind of his claim to fame was he had the big three home run day, and you know, that was kind of the end of Tuffy Rhodes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was looking to see if maybe they had some financial figures on any of these Japanese guys, but yeah, it doesn't look like it. You know, like Warren Cromartie spent a good deal of time over there. You know, the former, well, technically he was an Expo, even though the team doesn't exist anymore. He had a, what do you play there? On 7 years? You know, he played seven full seasons in Japan, but they don't list his financial figures from that time there. So
yeah, I'm wondering if a name recognition has something to do with the salary there. If he's a recognized major league ball player, has had some success here and goes to Japan, he might get more money than just a journeyman type player.
Yeah, well, you know, and I think, you know, a lot of guys now see it as their way back in. You know, you can go there. I mean, you look at Eric Thames. He was terrible his first run through. Went over to Korea, figured some things out, and came back and had three pretty solid years with the Brewers. You know, enough for the Nationals to take a shot with him, you know, for another year.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, it's true. Yeah, sometimes they seem to discover themselves out there. And it actually surprisingly carries over here, too.
Yeah, I know, you know, one name you'll recognize went over to Japan, had fantastic success as well, was Matt Merton.
Another ex-Cub.
So, yeah. Yeah, he hit, I remember one time seeing he hit like 350 or 360 in the Japanese league. And, you know, the big thing with him was hitting was never an issue. He just couldn't hit for power, and it really, for whatever reason, played against him in the major leagues. I guess, you know, you can hit for average, doesn't mean anything. So.
Well, there have been a few players I could think over the years that didn't have home run power, but turned out to be a solid Hall of Fame type player.
Yeah, apparently that doesn't mean anything anymore.
No. Well, you know the greatest single player and singles hitter in the history of baseball, right? Is not even in the Hall of Fame.
Nellie Fox. Oh, no, Pete Rose.
Pete Rose. Of course, he would have been in there a long time ago, except for he is a nasty human being. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, he'd have been a first ballot guy had he not,
for sure.
You know, had his
for
issues.
Sure.
So, you know, and I did want to let you know, I know you're always concerned about the ex-Cubs. I don't know if you saw this, but Hector Rondon did get a one-year deal with the Diamondbacks.
He's got
at least one. He was pretty solid for Houston the last couple years. So we'll have to see if he can carry it over. I mean, you know, he had two really good years closing for the Cubs and then ran into some struggles and kind of worked it out in Houston. So who knows? Maybe he'll keep it going in Arizona.
He got hurt, I think, the last year or two with the Cubs. And I think
then
after that, he seemed to be his health came back, and he did okay. He did okay, fairly decent with Houston. And so I think, what is he getting, $3 million for a year? One-year deal?
Yeah.
Or is it a little more than
million
that?
Yeah. Not bad money. I could live on that.
It'll be tough, though. You have to take a cut.
Yeah. You know, I'd probably have to be, you know, have to go back to shopping at Aldi or something, but I would be okay.
Exactly.
So, but all right, well, I wanted to jump in on this while I'm thinking about it. You know, we got four more football games this weekend, and you did split last week. You were correct making your Texans pick and your Seahawks pick, but the Patriots and the Saints really let you down. So
they did. And the one that really shocked me was the Patriots losing at home like that by a full touchdown. And that was a real shocker. I'm sure not too many people picked against them.
Yeah, I don't know. I did hear there were, well, gambling-wise, there were quite a bit of people who liked Tennessee and the points. So, you know, but obviously I'm not making you, you know, try to pick a spread or anything here. I just who you got.
Sure.
But we start off with, you know, tomorrow we got the 3:30, you know, 3:30, 7:15 games out like they do on Saturday. And I think we start with, this may be the toughest game for you to pick all weekend. We got Minnesota at San Francisco. I'm looking down the schedule here. So who you got there?
Well, despite Minnesota's surprising win last week, I'm going to have to go with the 49ers on that one.
All right. And then the nightcap tomorrow has the Tennessee Titans at the Baltimore Ravens. Who you going with there?
Well, let me think about that one. I'll take Baltimore.
So, and then, you know, they even screwed up the time for games. I hate when they do this. It's 2:05 and 5:40 on Sunday. So we're going with the opener on Sunday has the Houston Texans at the Kansas City Chiefs. Who you like there?
That's a tough one. That's a tough one, and I will have to go with Kansas City on that one.
So, and then, of course, you know, it all wraps up in Lambeau Field. I saw today they were asking for volunteers to come and shovel. We got the Seahawks going into Green Bay. So who you like there, Seattle or the Packers?
That is a tough one. That one is really a tough one. But I'm thinking of the weather and the fact that the Packers are going to be at home, and I will have to go with Green Bay to take that one.
I think you took all the home teams. Yeah, you took all the home teams.
Yes,
so.
I did. Yes, I did. I figure if I do that, at least I should get 50% right, if I do that.
Well, you'd hope, you know. We'll have to see. But, yeah, that's where we're, we're all set there. And, you know, see how it goes for you.
Do you see any upsets? I'm sure you're a more astute observer of the football scene than I am. So Well, you have any surprises up your sleeve?
You know, I like Minnesota. I would just kind of like them a little more if I knew if their wide receivers were healthy. You know, I know Stephon Diggs set out a couple practices, and then Adam Thielen had to have stitches in his ankle. You know, and they're both supposed to play. And I know San Francisco's got a tough, you know, defensive backfield anyways, but I just don't know. I thought they had the best shot kind of coming in. And then, you know, I mean, in reality at this point, I think anybody can beat anybody just depending how the gameplay kind of works out. But, you know, for whatever reason, it seems like everybody is against Green Bay, even though they were 13-3. You know, like I've heard experts calling them a fraud with that record and they're not that good. So maybe Seattle goes in there and beats them.
Yeah, I thought about that too, but then I thought about the home field advantage, and I assume it's going to be a nasty, cold Green Bay type game for Sunday.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, that seems to be the way the weather is pointing, but you know, again, who the heck knows, right? I mean,
right, exactly. And you mentioned, by the way, about that one Minnesota player that needed stitches. They were very obscure about what happened. It was some kind of a training accident. I found that very strange, and they didn't really go into great detail. Did you find anything out about that? How that happened?
No, all I heard was like the same thing you did, that he got hurt at practice, but they never really kind of said how he got hurt at practice, and it was just kind of like, oh, okay.
But he'll be ready to go, though, it looks like, for the game.
Well, he's supposed to be ready to play. I don't know what kind of shape he's going to be in, but apparently he's going to play. So we'll see how that kind of shakes out for him. And I guess this time of year, you don't want to give away any more than you have to give away.
No, exactly. Is Baltimore the best team in football?
Well, I think they were during the regular season, but as bad as Lamar Jackson was in the playoffs last year, I think he's got to kind of show that he can do this, and like I won't be surprised to see Kansas City give them a real difficult time if that ends up being the matchup next week.
Yeah, and that would be in Baltimore, though, correct? If they advance to the finals of the AFC.
Yeah, but I believe Kansas City beat them in Baltimore earlier in the year. Baltimore only lost one time on their home field, and I think it was Kansas City that beat them.
Yeah, I could see an upset for that game, and that would be a competitive game, certainly.
That's the biggest thing. I mean, we managed to get good games all last week. I mean, they were all close and they were all competitive. I'll be interested to see if we get the same thing again this week.
Yeah, I don't see a blowout, maybe, except for Baltimore, maybe the Baltimore game, but the rest of them I think will be competitive for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I kind of feel like it's like, okay, I don't know what the heck is going on. So, as much as I would like to think I do, I have no idea
you mentioned some of the critics saying that the Green Bay is a fraud. But that being said, it's hard to say who the best team is in the NFC this year. I don't see one dominant team among the four that are competing.
Yeah, well, the weird thing is, these were all the guys who last week had New Orleans going to the Super Bowl. So it's kind of like, okay, well, where are you now? They got beat by Minnesota. So
yeah, exactly. And what I don't want to see is the game being decided by a bogus call by the referees, a phantom roughing the passer, something that would affect the outcome of the game. I would hate to see that happen.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I liked what they did last week. To be honest, I really do think Kyle Rudolph committed pass interference, but I don't think they should have called it because it wasn't egregious.
It was not.
So,
no.
You know, I thought they did a pretty good job of restraint there. I know it sucks if you're a Saints fan because, you know, it seems like, you know, it's always the referees that kind of get to you, but.
If they ever notice the replays in some of these when there's no call, and boy, there always seems to be contact from both
yeah.
the offensive and the defensive player on a pass player play. So,
yeah, well, there is now. So
maybe they'll call it like
yeah.
The NBA. Incidental contact is not a foul.
Maybe. So, you know, it you know, it's probably, you know, because there's always hand fighting with these guys. And, you know, it's just one of those things that you're going to get. And, I mean, if they threw if they actually called every penalty in the game, nobody would watch because the games would take 7 hours.
Yeah. I do think there have been a lot of bad calls this year on roughing the passer plays. I mean, when it barely touched the guy, I mean, his hand maybe brushed against him, and that's roughing the passer, 15 yards. And they got to do a better job than that.
You know, last week was the complaint that they didn't call it on Carson Wentz when Jadeveon Clowney hit him. So it's one of those things where you just can't seem to win for losing.
No.
You know. And they did a nice job of explaining that. You know, I mean, Wentz wasn't giving himself up. He was a runner. You know, he wasn't technically a quarterback at that time, so he doesn't get the quarterback protection. He wasn't giving himself up or trying to slide or anything like that. So, you know, it made sense. I mean, it was sad to see him get hurt, especially since he was my fantasy
yeah.
quarterback in the playoff.
Right.
You know, I ate my
quick,
he was 1-4 for 2 yards.
Him. I've seen
me.
A couple of plays. I've seen a couple of plays when at the very last second, the quarterback will go into a slide. Meanwhile, prior to that last second slide, the defensive player is going for him and they call him. And I think that's wrong also.
Yeah. Well, you know, I get it that, you know, you want to protect the quarterback. I mean, these guys are, you know, basically the faces of the league, but yeah, you've got to, you got to get a really nice happy median here and
yeah.
see what goes
I mean,
on.
Football. It is football, right? That's the name of the game is football.
Not anymore. It's not.
No.
You know,
Jim McMahon would have been around a lot longer if they had those rules when he was playing, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I understand. I mean, when you hear some of these veteran, you know, former players talk, you know, I can understand what they're getting at when it's kind of like, well, you know, you would be this or that. And, yeah, I mean, you know, that great Bears defense from 85 wouldn't have been the great Bears defense because they'd have called a penalty on him every time.
Yeah, exactly. So. Exactly right. Remembering that one play that when Charles Martin body slammed Jim McMahon after the play
yeah.
was over with. That was and
yeah.
he was out
yeah.
for the rest of the season because of that. And that was one of the nastiest. I mean, if he did that now, he'd probably be kicked out of the league for life.
Yeah, probably. Or at least a year. So
at least.
Oh, wow. Hey, look at that. You and I made it through another hour. I just got to find the music
yeah.
key there. There it is. All right, let's see if it plays.
All right.
There
we go.
All right, well, whatever you want.